What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Yala. Your thrice weekly podcast where we talk about the hottest news with a touch of what, Terrence?
Good old humor.
Good old humor, man.
Yeah.
Wow, it's a parliamentary week.
Yeah.
Is Parliament still sitting today? I think so, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And then we were joking about how after the last episode, just as we end, there'll be some bombshells coming out of Parliament, but not so much. Right?
Not so much. Maybe because this is the final parliamentary session under Lee Hsien Loong's watch. So they want to make, you know, like a little bit low-key, don't be too outrageous.
There hasn't been any kind of commemorating the occasion. Maybe at the end of today's Parliament or something on the 8th. There has to be lah.
So you mean a round of applause or something?
I don't know what possibly. They do in Parliament. You know, they always bang the the what you call it?
The gavel.
No, the armchair.
Oh, the armchair. Oh yeah, they just bang the wood.
Bang the wood in Parliament.
But I mean the Malaysian king was in Parliament yesterday.
Yeah, I just found it out before the podcast. He was sitting in Parliament.
The
whole time.
Yeah, what's so surprising about that?
It's damn weird, right?
We also go and sit in Parliament sometimes.
We sit in the gallery.
Yeah. But he's the Malaysian king, right?
So, there's all this talk about how, you know, we don't want foreign entities influencing our politics. I find it damn weird that he could come into Parliament.
He's just observing.
I don't know. It's weird. Don't you think it's weird?
No. Like, you can go and... You can listen to the full parliamentary session on YouTube if you want to.
But as I say, you go watch a football game versus being on the bench, right? One is you're a spectator. One is you are part of it.
But being on a bench means also that you have participation in the game, but he doesn't have any participation in the game.
No, but even then, even if you are not a backbencher or even someone to go into the place or in the vicinity of the bench, it's not open to anyone.
It's not lah. But I guess as a dignitary and all that, a foreign dignitary.
Does it happen often? Foreign dignitary sitting in our parliament?
But remember, Joseph Schooling was applauded in parliament and everything.
But he didn't sit lah.
He didn't sit lah, but he was down there. Right? It's not like he was in the gallery. Right?
Yeah, so come down and then fuck off lah.
I don't know how long the Malaysian king stayed for. Did he stay for the whole thing?
I don't know. We'll find out.
I imagine if you are beyond a certain age or so, it's a bit sian to have to sit there for the whole session. It's like 5 hours long talking about traffic violations and stuff. Like, why would you sit in?
Okay, so for real, he's the first king of Malaysia to visit Parliament House with Parliament in session. So it is a first.
Okay, no, but he stayed the whole way. That's my question.
Or did he do a schooling
and just like, after the applause, just leave?
I mean, he was hosted by Speaker of Parliament, Seah Kian Peng, who also delivered a short address to the house to honour the king. And then, I'm guessing he left. I don't think he can stay that long.
No, this VIPs, they never stay for very long on these events.
I still find it weird.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, for you, it's perfectly understandable that just...
It's understandable for, I mean, who he is, like the king of our most immediate neighbour. If you told me it was like Nas Daily or something sitting in there, I'd be like, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah,
but like for a visiting foreign dignitary.
But if it's a foreign politician?
Also, if they hold a very big role in the government or something, I think it's okay. It's observing the parliamentary process. Just like how when we go, we're also big shots, right? We walk in and like, oh, you never know what's...
Deposit all our goods, is it?
Yeah, but you never know what's the next thing we're going to talk about, podcast, what's going to drop, you know? Then, you know, we also observe Parliament.
Speaker of Parliament got to give a short address to honour our presence.
Never. But I had eye contact with at some point with some MPs, all that kind of thing.
Oh, is it? You had eye contact?
Those guys cannot say anything.
I don't know, man. Still feels weird. Still feels weird that there's a foreign participant there.
I think it's okay.
It's okay. I think it's weird. I mean, he's the first king, which means this is not happening very often.
Yeah, but again, it might be because it's Lee Hsien Loong's last hurrah in Parliament as the PM, right?
Oh, maybe.
To show the gravity of this occasion, right? Yeah.
Maybe. We'll never know.
Never know.
Mm. But how else has the week been, Terrence?
It's pretty interesting, you know, like stuff's getting busy, everyone's getting busy. And
enjoying the rain?
I think the rain much needed.
Respite,
I also had a lot of neck issues in the last couple of days. Has made me, very cognizant of very appreciative of very basic things in life, right?
Like what?
like swivel chairs, like swivel chairs, because I've had a lot of trouble turning my neck recently.
Yeah.
And I never realized swivel chairs are so freaking awesome until like, and you have to sit in a meeting, then you have to swivel to look at people.
I see.
Yeah.
But the neck was just like a sitting or sleeping in the wrong position.
Yeah, one of those things.
So it's not like, what's the word? Chronic or anything. It's not a long-term thing.
I would say it's long term because I have these problems on and off ever since I was in the army as a machine gun commander where you had to carry very heavy things. Yeah. So yeah, you know, after that I started to have neck problems. They have plagued me like occasionally since then. Can't blame the army, but I'm sure, you know, whatever lifestyle choices I made along the way also contributed to it, right? It's all about the choices you make, lah.
But yeah, your neck did seem quite bad yesterday, lah.
Yeah,
lucky I'm sitting directly in front of you.
Correct.
Or lucky we don't have like two guests, you know.
Yeah, that would be very painful. But again, swivel chairs, and this is not chairs. An endorsement of like the you know chairs you're seeing, lah. But I'm saying literally, like good swivel chairs are really like important.
Cool, man.
Yeah. Anything for you that you've come to appreciate the last
about
couple days?
Chairs. Or last
about anything, lah.
No, just the weather. Mm. Like raining at night. I mean, it's helpful that it for like at least where I say it's been raining a lot at night. During the day, not so much. So it kind of cools the country down. Like today, I had to walk to our first meeting, and I was like, hey, shit. There's no scorching sun burning the shit out of me.
So
it's nice, it's nice.
Yeah, over the weekend, I did spend an inordinate amount of time in the sun.
The beach, right?
At the beach, at the pool and everything. It was just, it was really torturous. At the end of it, you're like, why do you put yourself through these things?
Yeah.
But that's our Singapore weather, right?
Indeed, man, indeed.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, again, we might sound like two middle-aged old dudes complaining about weather, when actually young people... they might like it, right? You know, they might like this, the fact that Singapore's always hot, it's always hot and wet and everything. And traveling overseas becomes more enjoyable, right? When you get away from this weather.
Yeah, but that's like saying you make your life shit so that your holiday, it becomes more enjoyable.
Yeah. But again, I've spoken to Germans and Finnish people who love our weather like nothing. They'd rather sweat in their armpits than freeze in the cold, right? Yeah. You know these people as well, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, extreme cold also, I'm not the biggest fan. Like, having to wear, like, seven layers and all, I don't like that.
I like short periods of extreme cold.
Short period of extreme cold is nice.
Kind of like when you watch Game of Thrones, they can travel for, like, 1-2 days, suddenly they go into, like, the snowy territory. Then two days back, then it's, like, bright and sunny.
Oh, that'd be great. Maybe you go JB like that.
Imagine if you just drive to JB, then, fucking it's freezing.
No, technically, great. You go snow city,
Yeah, but how long? And it's so artificial. It feels so artificial. Remember when we went to Dubai and then there was... we actually went, snowboarding in Dubai.
Snowboarding, right? And then after that, come out to the mall and have coffee.
Yeah. And then the whole thing was... It just felt so surreal, right? The whole experience. There's just something off. It's a bit like when your brain cannot process like VR properly.
But you know, like now with the climate change, almost the weathers are becoming more extreme. You know, now it rains very heavy, then it's hot as shit during the day, right?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe 10 years down the road, it'll snow at night, then be hot as shit during the day.
Yeah. At the rate we're going, stuff changing.
It's becoming more and more extreme.
There was like even flooding and everything in Bukuma. I saw like images of dogs swimming in the basement car park.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and there was videos of like people's dogs like taking a dip. Crazy,
crazy man.
Yeah,
crazy times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Parliament's still set.
Yes,
we still have something, a couple of things to talk about.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess we can jump into it. But before we jump into it, what do we normally say, Terrence?
Welcome to Yellow Butt. And if you're new here, please do consider subscribing or following wherever you're listening to this because it helps to train the algorithm to tell people that this is fucking awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're on your phone, desktop now, you see the red or green button there, just click it. All right, just click it, leave us a review. And if you want to work with us, you can check us out at ministryoffunny.com.
Yeah.
Sweet.
All right.
Okay, cool. So, the first topic. I mean, it's off the back of some horrible things that have been happening, or one particular this year, a horrible accident. It was the discussion around the penalties for dangerous driving in Parliament. And I mean, ahead of that, there were a bunch of questions that were raised towards the Ministry of Home Affairs. And there were questions like, you know, how the LTA can deter the occurrence of similar accidents in high traffic areas, how accident risk can be minimized in future through road design and traffic management, how many fatal accidents have occurred due to reckless driving over the past 5 years, whether there's a need to review existing penalties, if there's a need to raise the relevant penalties, whether it's good that we require all drivers to attend periodic refresher courses, and what measures are being taken to improve road safety. So a lot of these were put forth, and they were all responded to in Parliament. But, you know, just at the headline, right, penalties not for dangerous driving adequate will not be increased for now. Well, what was your initial thought?
My initial thing was, I was quite, at first I was like, oh, how come MHA, Ministry of Home Affairs, is talking about road safety and traffic and all that, like, right? Typically, I would think it's LTA or something. But yeah, then I realized it's about the penalties. I think that's what a lot of the discussions were. Are the punishments, are the punishments enough, you know, for incidents of reckless or dangerous driving? Because I think that's where people, in this case in Tampines, that's where the most outrage is. In that, not in that, you know, it's not like he didn't get caught. He got caught and he, you know, he's being charged and everything. But we know for a fact already that the, you know, the punishment is not, I mean, in most people's minds, it feels like it's not adequate, right? And a lot of people, lay people, are looking at whatever he's going to get, like 5 to 8 years or something like that for, you know, essentially ending two lives, right? Instantly. Yeah, people are feeling like that's not fair, because you talk about someone who commits murder or what, you know, it's easily life imprisonment or 20 to 30 years or something. But you kill two lives with the choice, making the choice, that's what we're saying, of driving dangerously or recklessly. You get like single digit sentences. Yeah. So people are saying, is that adequate law? And that's what I think the most of the discussion actually centered around. That's why MHA was the one responding to all this.
Oh, that's true. It didn't occur to me that if it's MHA. Yeah. So that means if they wanted to change the rules per se, it would be LTA. Presumably. No,
But you talk about road safety. Like, yeah. What things, not necessarily, rules, I guess, yeah.
Road rules, is LTA, but the punishments is MHA.
Yeah. No, actually, rules, I think, might still be under MHA, but then you would probably think the LTA would be fronting a lot of these things.
Oh, I see.
But now it's really about law, right? The MHA side of things,
And I mean, all the MPs asked, so even one of the people who asked the questions was the MP who's the chairman of the Government Parliamentary Committee for Transport, Saktiandi Supat. So there were a bunch of questions that were asked by quite a few politicians. But basically, like what I read and what I heard from the response was that, that it's adequate enough, and that the number of fatalities and accidents, number of accidents over the past 4 years have actually decreased. Unfortunately, the number of fatalities has increased. But even Amy Kaur came out and said that the junction in particular, the Tampines Junction, where there were, because there was one question about whether that is going to be reviewed, the design. She said the design, it meets international safety standards. So just by looking at it, even without going into the details, it felt like they were trying to make the point that, okay, it's safe enough. It is, road safety is a societal thing that everybody plays a part in. There have been improvements that have been made, and didn't feel that urgent. Whether it needed something.
And that's where a lot of the people are not very happy online, right?
Yeah.
Some even calling out, like, I think the MP Poli Sun, she asked about, what additional road safety measures can be taken at that particular Tampines Junction to reduce accidents. And I think there were some threads on Reddit and all where people are flaming her, saying like, what kind of stupid question is that? Because ultimately, if you saw the accident videos and all that, there's nothing that could have prevented it, because the guy just decided to drive a certain way. And whether it was red light, green light, amber, whatever, it didn't matter. He was just going to, you know, speed past that particular traffic light, and no amount of road safety measures or education can prevent that, right?
Yeah.
So people are saying, what's the point of that question? It's more about can we punish the guy more severely, right? To send a message. But that's where I think what they're saying is that actually Singapore already meets international our laws are quite adequate for that kind of thing already, right, in terms of punishing them.
I mean, this was all delivered by the Minister of State for Home Affairs, Muhammad Faizal Ibrahim. So, So, I mean, he said all the stuff you would expect him to say, that, you know, the TP, traffic police, works with the land LTA to improve the road infrastructure. Mm. The government is fully committed. But, you know, after reading it and watching the videos, it still doesn't stand out to me what the reasons were for him. Like, do you recall? Mm. Like, they all felt like pretty textbook answers, lah.
I mean, I guess it's coming from the point that if you want to revise the law, right?
Yeah.
And talk about the penalties and punishments, all that. It's not an immediate process that's like that. Like, you know, there needs to be, probably people need to research it, you know, find precedents elsewhere in the world and everything. And what he's coming back and saying is that actually what we have is comparable to what is practiced in other parts of the world and all that, lah. If not more, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, as much as everyone was very disturbed by what had happened in Tampines, all that, you know, if you take away the emotional side of things, he's trying to say that, hey, logically, we already have this framework in place that for now seems adequate, lah, right? Mm. And understandably, a lot of people are upset about it and feel that it should be more stringent and strict, but the law doesn't work that way, lah, right?
Yeah.
The law works on by, you know, following the book and interpretations of those rules that you set. So to want to open up the whole thing, kind of, maybe it needs more than just one incident or something to get people to really push it along that way, lah. And so he talks about other measures that are being put in place to try and deter speeding, but, you know, whether it's the traffic police working harder or like technology like cameras being deployed, more cameras being deployed around the island and things like that.
Yeah.
But why? So, I mean, I'm hearing from you, like, you sound like you're not very convinced by this argument.
I mean, because the thing is, so the specific things you said, you know, some of the things he said that 800, so since last month, the TP has progressively activated the speed enforcement function in red light cameras across the island. So he did say that it's not possible to install them at all traffic junctions and zebra crossings. Mm. But in the 6 weeks that it has been there, they've already kind of like found 800 speed violations. So that was done. And then he said that TP has also intensified ad hoc enforcement, detecting close to 1,400 violations and arresting 29 motorists for traffic-related and other offences.
Mm.
So it feels like they stepped up some stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess, okay, maybe, like, I also, like, when I think about it, I'm like, okay, like, for laws to change, yeah, like, having a few incidents happen doesn't mean that the laws need to change.
Yeah.
Right? These could just be anomalies. And of course, now it almost feels like every day you open up, there is some accident that's happening. Right? Maybe they are getting more airtime because that's at top of mind and they know people will click. Right? But it feels like that, right? Yeah. But statistically, what he said is that number of accidents resulting in injuries or fatalities has fallen about 10% in the last 5 years. Number of accidents resulting in fatalities has increased by 12%. So it feels like less than what... it is less than what it feels.
Yeah.
But maybe what affects this whole thing is, you know, the recent news about LTA with the new ERP 2.0, especially when he said that the top cause of the fatal accidents between 2019 and 2023... well, failure to keep a proper lookout and to have proper control of one's vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, the first reason, failure to keep a proper lookout. So you have that reason, and then you have ERP 2.0 where you are like literally forcing the driver to change his seat position, which is going to affect his lookout.
Yeah.
Right? So that with that context, it feels like, huh. Then on the flip side also, you know, our previous podcast, we talked about Lawrence Wong saying that the government needs to spend time, you know, limiting child's screen time. So that feels like, okay, there's efforts to move towards that. But this one, it just felt like, huh. It's like, okay, it's adequate.
Oh, you sound like an angry boomer. Like, linking everything. Like,
I know. I mean,
and then blaming like, the government.
This whole thing is fucked up, you know. Fucked up.
Then you're going to be like, oh, you know, Lawrence Wong play guitar. That distracts everyone from the issue.
Room, I got all these articles and I got the red lines all connecting.
Wow, that's really like...
But maybe that's why the feeling is like, I was like, oh, okay, just adequate. It might be. It might be. And it might just be that there's an emotional part of me that is feeling that. Yeah. But I don't know, man.
I think... Yeah, the emotion is valid. Like, people feel that it's injustice, right? Like, even just watching that this guy, I mean, there were pictures of the person who drove that vehicle. There are pictures of how he was just sitting at the side of the road, you know, like, you know, just chilling, you know, right after the accident, while like the ambulance was there trying to help people and all that. And people are angry about that. So there's a very strong emotional reaction to this accident and this person and the feeling of injustice that he's not going to get punished adequately for this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, that's the main thing, whether the punishments are strict enough. So there are all these discussions about road safety education or having more traffic lights or that, traffic cameras. That, to me, like feels like a separate discussion from what the MHA side of things needs to be. It's about, does the punishment, is it enough for these violations? Because there have been other, remember, high-profile incident in the past where in Bugis, I think, there was a man who drove a Ferrari at like this insane speeds and crashed in a taxi and killed the driver and killed himself. He killed himself and his passenger, right? But this innocent taxi driver who wasn't, I don't even know if he was like driving or moving or was just parked there or what. But everyone died. Everyone perished at the same time. But this one, the guy who caused the accident is literally even walking around, right? Mm. And becoming public enemy number one. And that's where I think you know, if you are a lawmaker, you kind of need to measure the pitchforks are out. This guy is public enemy number one. If he's, people know how he looks and everything, there might be, it could lead to very unpleasant things like violence and things like that, right? So is there something that needs to be done to show that he's being punished for various things, right? Mm. Even more than just the accident. And unfortunately, if the law says this is the punishment, that's the punishment, right? And you can't amend it just because you want to find justice for this one incident, right?
Yeah. Because, it just, like what you said, knowing that pitchforks might be out, that's also not the best reason to change a law, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I lost my train of thought.
But he did say that the road traffic, the RTA, basically the laws are around, mm-hmm. around dangerous driving and all this, were amended in 2019 already and made harsher. So it shows that it can be changed, right?
You know,
with the political will and everything, it can be changed.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, do you think, is there something also that the fact that nowadays, last time when you walk around Singapore, when you see a Ferrari on the road, it's like, whoa, that's a big deal. Someone drive Ferrari, as a student, or you walk past it, you're staring at it. Now it's like a dime a dozen. Everywhere you go, you sort of see a sports car revving down the road and everything. Do you feel that also leads to people being angry about, those people who drive super fast cars and there's some resentment against them and how they treat Singapore like a playground?
I think so.
You think so?
I think that it's because if you look at a recent incident where there was that Bentley, the guy was outside scolding the teacher and all, right?
The school, right? And then he was almost running over a security guard or something.
The person who was ushering the kids, So immediately he's known as the Bentley driver.
Mm-hmm.
Even this one, there was the Mercedes driver who wasn't.
Yeah.
And I think there is that sentiment of last time, when I was young, so I see Ferrari, I'm like, wow, look at that. But I can imagine now the sentiment is like, look at that Ferrari.
Sense of entitlement.
Yeah, look at this Ferrari. This is the problem with Singapore. And then all the boomer feelings come out.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know how much that contributes to the sentiment or tension on the road. It might, maybe it's in totality, people are just more tense on the road. Mm. Oh, my question I wanted to ask you just now, because you've been driving longer than me.
Mm.
Do you feel like the conditions on the road, people's behavior and all has changed over the years?
I've never felt that Singapore is a very pleasant place to drive,
compared to
other places I've driven. Mm. Whether it's Europe, Japan, Korea, US also.
Mm.
I've always felt like Singapore, not because of the behavior of the people on the road, per se, but it is because of the behavior of people on the road. But I feel like more can be done to actually discourage bad driving behavior, right? My most recent trip to an island in Korea called Jeju, it's twice the size of Singapore. But when I was driving there, it was quite remarkable how many times I had to slow down because there were speed cameras in the school zones. So like school zone or old people zone or what, regardless, there will be a speed camera. Whereas in Singapore, I felt like when you go enter school zones or old people zone, there's no camera. It's a lot of times they say it's a zone, but there's no camera, nothing to really enforce you slowing down and all that, right? Because in that process of seeing that there's a lot of cameras around everywhere I was driving in Korea, right? It made me like consciously slow down at all these places, right? Of course, you should slow down regardless, right? When you see that it's a thing. But there being a camera made you doubly more conscious of it. And sometimes you even realize that you're actually going above the speed limit. Then you're, oh shit, you quickly catch yourself. Whereas Singapore, I feel like there are these speed cameras littered around the island, but they're usually at like big expressways or big junctions and all that. And it doesn't make you more conscious of the environment that you're driving in, like a school zone or an old person zone and all that. So subconsciously, I think the placement of these cameras matter. And I feel like in Singapore, they don't place them at, either they only place them at big junctions or expressways, but they don't place them at the places where it would really matter, where there are old people or there are young people, young kids hanging out and all.
But then, you know, when you hear more cameras, what is the feeling inside you? Do you have that feeling like, you don't need to watch everything we do?
So that's the irony. I actually like it that there are more cameras on the road to prevent people from speeding. Because at the end of the day, as a human, like a human being just walking around, how much destruction can you do? But when you're in this like flying box of metal flying at 100 kilometers per hour, how much damage can you do? You do so much more damage, you know?
Yeah.
So even as a pedestrian, I would want there to be more cameras to catch this kind of thing, right? As opposed to, if you speed on Lonnie, not condoning it, but you speed on Lonnie, you're on the expressway or that, there's no passenger, there's no pedestrians at all, right? The kind of harm that you cause versus if you speed at like even a little bit more than what is permissible in a school zone or old person zone, the kind of harm that you can cause in those zones is much more than you would in like on the expressway, right?
Yeah.
So I feel in a lot of places I've driven, I felt like, actually Singapore, almost easy to get away with bad driving etiquette, I find. So I've always found Singapore very tense and very almost like feels like, you better look around the corner because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think for me, the bigger thing that has stood out, because I mean, I drive when once in a while when I get like my wife's family car and all.
Yeah.
Then I find the tension thing, is the thing that stands out to me most.
In Singapore.
On the road, right? Because I can imagine in Jeju, it's twice the size of Singapore, but population is a lot less,
Yeah.
A lot less dense, right?
Yeah.
But in Singapore, everyone is on edge,
Yeah.
And I sometimes find myself I'm getting on edge because you're just like in a, it's like every man for himself on the road. And I find there's something, and I often have that thought also, this is literally, I don't like, thousands of people drive cars every day with so much freedom.
Yeah.
Like, even if you talk about giving your iPhone to 1,000 people to hold, probably someone will drop it.
Yeah.
Right, but thousands of people on the road just driving this car and you don't want cameras everywhere, but maybe a bit more enforcement. Like I found out only from Amy Kaur's speech that apparently over the past few years, they've slowly changed the discretionary right turn. Which also one of those things that I think since 2018, they've replaced the discretionary right turns at over 1,200 traffic junctions. So what I understand this to be is normally for the one where you're turning at a cross junction, there is just a green light.
Yeah.
That where there's oncoming traffic and you make the call whether to go or not.
Yeah.
Whereas now there is red, yellow,
the arrow,
green. Yeah, the green light.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which before that, it always boggled my mind that you're leaving this choice to people to make. I don't know how it is in other countries. I've most of the places where I've ridden is scooters, islands or something. But big cities, do you know how it works in other countries?
There are discretionary turns, But Singapore, because a lot of times we have a lot more traffic in highly populated areas. So the discretionary right turn is literally you're making a decision about oncoming traffic, you're making a decision about pedestrians crossing at the same time while, you know, in your own vehicle. So it was always a weak point for me that I feel like, they're trying to address now.
But I mean, I can understand, that sometimes can be a bottleneck, because the right turn's always there. But it just felt like I was leaving too much responsibility to people on the road. And in this case, I also think that another thing that's going to make me sound like a boomer, right?
Yeah,
One of these things that we always hear that for drugs, right, deterrents are damn powerful.
Yeah.
If you want to stop behavior, the deterrent, the punishment must be so high, and we have seen the results. But for driving, right, that doesn't apply.
Yeah. But I mean, don't you feel that sometimes it's not so much, I mean, the rules are everything, but sometimes it just boils down to people's, kind of like, unfair, I'll not say unfair, but people's unrealistic expectations about things in Singapore, right?
Mm.
For example, I know you are one, so I think you're a good person to ask. Okay. Those people who are stickler for arriving on time, in Singapore. You go to any other country, right? China, Thailand, or anywhere with like any kind of traffic. And then you see the building down the street. It's like, it looks like it's really close by.
But it's fucking far.
You call the car to come here, it will take like 40 minutes of traffic to get to somewhere that looks like it should be 5 minutes away, right?
Yeah.
But in Singapore, you see the building there, you feel pretty confident you can get there within 5 minutes, right? Mm. And so it breeds this unrealistic expectation where people don't think about driving safely in traffic or, waiting for things because there's an expectation Singapore must be on time. You come like 1 minute late, that's rude to the person. And I've always found that only in Singapore where like, people have this like expectation that you cannot be late for something. Do you feel that is unrealistic?
I still think it's good to be punctual, Terrence. I think it's good to be punctual. But
it's good to be punctual, but when you can predict.
Yeah, so let me get to my point. So I'm saying, because I also find that when, let's say if I have my access to the car, right? And I'm going to somewhere, because my expectation is this normally takes 20 minutes.
Correct.
So then, I leave at 9:35 to get there by 10. But the moment there's some unforeseen thing.
Or traffic.
Traffic. Then I'm like, oh shit, I'm going to be late and blah. Then I feel the tension mount up. And I do, as much as I didn't like that you put it that way, because punctuality is still good, I do agree with you that there's this expectation, right?
Yeah.
That is a bit too idealistic.
Mm.
And when that fails, right, it puts people into this mode.
Yeah.
I think that is a huge problem in Singapore.
So you expect that of people and then you give people the
over
angry
the years
face.
I've gotten better. I don't message you ETA anymore.
I'll give you that. Last time you I tell you I'm 5-10 minutes away because of traffic. Then you're ETA, like multiple times in one exchange.
Not multiple times. Maybe once. And I think last time it feels like you would purposely take longer when I message you.
I wasn't purposely. Yes, exactly. You think that I'm purposely taking longer, but I'm telling you, I'm literally trying to fight traffic and you don't believe. You just think I'm purposely.
Because I know that annoyed you.
It's damn annoying.
But see, I don't do it anymore. People can change. Punctuality is still virtue, still good, but you need to have more leeway. And I think in Singapore, there is an unrealistic expectation. Because even when I go down to the train station now, if I ever see 7 minutes for the next train,
You're angry, right?
I'll be like, fuck.
In some ways, all those breakdowns of the MRTs in those previous years kind of changed people's mindsets about
train.
Even train travel cannot be 100% predictable, your timing.
But don't you think it's gotten back there?
It's better already. Fewer breakdowns. But there was this period when there were just so many breakdowns happening. Like if someone messaged you, hey, sorry, I'm late, MRT breakdown. You're like,
okay.
Whereas 20 years ago, I don't think that was a thing. So it's I feel in Singapore, in some ways, because we're so efficient, we've been trained to almost traffic cannot be so bad. I can speed faster and overtake here, overtake there, and then I'll reach there in time,
I really think so. Because you can imagine when you hear stories of people from abroad, going to work, they'll say, okay, I budget 2 hours. If I reach 1 hour, great. But I budget 2 hours. Singapore, I think it's almost the minimum required, maybe add a bit of buffer. And when things go wrong, and I think more often than not, happens. So feel like Singapore is tense. And even walking on zebra crossings, right? Last time, I think I would be less conscious of the car actually stopping before I walk. Now it feels sometimes they will go so fast right up till the end.
Yeah.
And it feels like, oh shit, if I didn't really stop and make a move, like hint that I'm going, would they have just driven past? Like?
Mm.
So it just feels like everyone's tenser.
Yeah, yeah. So now you add cyclists to the mix also.
Yeah.
We have a lot more like recreational, like,
oh, that's true.
Spandex warriors. You know,
yeah.
Big groups, 20 of them riding.
Who just kena caught also, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this sense of entitlement is not just about people who drive big cars, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You also feel that, hey, how come these cyclists like hog the lane or, you know, ride abreast when they're not supposed to? And yeah. Like that, like,
and I mean, right? Even pedestrians, not so innocent also. Sometimes I see people on their phones, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's say, because at traffic lights, if the road is clear, sometimes people walk first.
Yeah.
Right? But if you are walking first, you kind of walk fast. Like. Mm. I've literally seen some, because I'm sometimes the person to just, okay, road clear, I'll still walk. Like. Yeah. But the person next to me on their phone, they just follow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they walk at a very slow pace.
Mm.
Then, like, it's super dangerous. Like. Yeah. So I think it's one of those things that because the behavior is changing on the road, feels like the rules also need to, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. Because even the junctions, the big junctions, traffic junctions when I was traveling in Korea.
Yeah.
Like they will have, rather than just look at the traffic light, they will have these strips on the floor that light green and red for you to walk. Which is like, people's all looking down at their phones now. The best way to do it is like literally put the light on the floor, right?
And I think Bugis Junction, they do that. Yeah, they do that. I don't know whether it's still, but I've seen it before.
So my thought is like, we can do that more.
Yeah, we can do that more.
In fact, we should, because, you know, people are looking down at their phones. So the best way to ensure that they really see it is like put it on the floor. So I think we should not discount the fact that more can be done to make it a safer environment for whether it's drivers or pedestrians or cyclists and all that in Singapore.
Yeah.
And the rule, the laws aside to punish, you know, errant drivers, I think more can be done at the LTA, the Ministry of Transport level. So,
right. And I mean, it's not a Singapore-only thing, because just from Googling, like in Australia, there are discussions in Parliament to review the speeds for Victorian roads.
Yeah.
In BBC, there's MPs calling for tighter rules around new drivers specifically.
Mm.
Then I chanced upon this article on Bloomberg that talked about how in the 70s, the rate of fatalities in Netherlands and the US was relatively the same, which was bad.
Yeah.
But since then, the Dutch have brought it down so much because their philosophy towards roads and road sharings and spaces on the roads changed a lot. There were protests in the Netherlands in the 70s after, I think, a series of road accidents.
Yeah.
And it changed. So that's why I agree that, like, maybe reviews are being done. I don't know. I don't know how often road reviews are done, but the response felt a bit like, okay, you know, they're adequate.
Yeah.
And all that. Without acknowledging that, people are interacting with roads differently now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, our behavior when walking around is different.
Yeah.
So in some sense, like we reacted very quickly for PMDs, right? And how they were endangering pedestrians. So why can't we do something more for road users, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, change constitution also can react very fast.
Yeah. No, I mean, okay lah. I mean, aside from this kind of snarky, like boomer.
The boomer in me. Hold it down, man. Hold it down.
Literally, no other country was banning PMDs, right?
Yeah.
Singapore just said, we don't care whether it's going to ban it, right?
Yeah,
so all this idea about international precedent, you know, sometimes you use international precedent.
That's true.
Why like that, you know?
Meet international standards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do we say that our PMD...
Censorship also meet international standards.
Our mainstream, our media ranked in what freedom and the press. We don't care about international standards.
Yeah,
So I feel like, this international standards thing cannot pick and choose. You know, you want to use for all.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, man. But thank you for not texting the ETA thing anymore.
Oh, welcome. People can say, I take feedback into account. I might bitch about it, but I take feedback.
It takes many years.
Hey, fuck you. Okay? It did not take many years. Okay? It did not take many years. Before, we didn't have a podcast then.
Yeah,
so that's why we didn't talk about it. It didn't take many years.
Okay.
Don't give me that nonsense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of taking feedback into account and all that, right? There's been a lot of outrage about something that has come out over what's supposed to be a very happy occasion, right?
Mm.
And this brand seems to have taken to feedback, but maybe we want to examine what this outrage is about first, this marketing campaign.
Mm.
What is it?
It was the marketing campaign for OSIM, where they basically, I mean, it first trended on Reddit, I believe.
Yeah.
And they had a Mother's Day ad, a picture, where it was for one of their devices. Like in the picture, there's a handful of devices, actually, that is meant, I guess, for reducing tummy fat. So for Mother's Day, the sign they put was beat her belly bulge. Beat her belly bulge. So on Reddit, it started trending. I think it got like almost 2,000 upvotes, 400,000 views, because people were saying that, yo, doesn't this kind of like encourage domestic abuse and fat shaming? And OSIM has since kind of like taken down the ad, apologized, that was that. But I think people are just kind of talking about how did this happen in the first place? Like, it's obviously so bad.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking, is it obviously that bad?
Or is it wokeism? Wokeism gone wrong.
Wokeism? Yeah. I mean, Mother's Day is also coming up, right? Happy soon to be Mother's Day to all mothers out there. But for this, right, what are your thoughts, Terrence?
A lot of people saying, how could they have possibly got approved and all that, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to speculate that the original tagline was probably closer to beat the belly bulge.
Mm.
And because they wanted to encourage people to buy these as gifts for their mothers, so they changed the to her, beat her belly bulge. Like, you are helping her beat her belly bulge.
So actually, it was a slogan by OSIM earlier in the year, beat the body bulge.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So I think, because I think when you use the and her, very different connotations already, right?
Yeah.
But I did want to ask you, when you see that beat her belly bulge, which, like, they say it could spur two kinds of, emotions, right? One to do with fat shaming, the other one with domestic violence. Which one do you really think that these two are being, encouraged by this?
I think, because for context also, for people who haven't seen the ad, the way it is placed is the first top line is beat her, and then below, slightly to the right, is belly bulge. But going to your question, when I see it, do I think of domestic violence? No.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a slogan that was not that good.
Okay.
You?
No, I thought the domestic violence thing was a bit of a stretch. The criticisms of domestic violence. Because beat her belly bulge. I think, yeah, you can say, like what you say, like the placement of the words, all that. But the word beat doesn't always mean like punch or anything.
Beat her.
Beat her. I mean, like,
how often you say the phrase, Terrence, beat her?
Exactly. That's why the and the her is a very big difference.
Thing,
big huge
thing.
Difference that, that I can see how, as a marketer, maybe you're like, oh, yeah, let's just go with beat the belly bulge, but let's encourage people to buy the gift for their mother. So it's beat her, help beat her belly. That's why maybe they put the word help in front. Help beat her belly bulge.
That one you asking for gang domestic violence.
Help me.
Hey, in Singapore, husbands all sharing their wives, no?
Oh, yeah, right. That's
what help beat her belly bulge is an invite for a gang.
Just to add context, in case you want to cancel Harish for saying husbands sharing their wives. They're talking about that.
One case, lah.
There was a case where these men were a criminal case, in fact, where they were sharing, involuntarily sharing their
voluntarily
wives.
Sharing their
incapacitated wives. Yeah, it was a nasty thing.
In case you're a foreigner thinking of moving to Singapore, it's not a thing that happens very often. It's just isolated cases.
Yeah. But to me, the fat shaming thing was the more egregious one.
Because it's her belly bulge.
Yeah. Right. It's like you are pointing out to your mother that she got a belly bulge. Which I think, as anyone who, has kids, all that, mothers go through a lot for childbirth. Mm. A lot of things out of their control, and it's not easy to, work your body back. Don't look at Instagram and all the Instagram moms and all that who a month after they give birth, suddenly they're back in the gym exercising.
Because of their commitment and willpower. Because of that.
You have to get personal trainers, hire personal trainers. Yeah. Of course, you can beat the belly bulge, but for the most part, it's tough, right?
Yeah.
So I did feel that the fat shaming thing, I can vibe with that. Valid.
If it was beat the belly bulge?
Then it's okay, because it's more of like, I mean, it's a real thing for women, right? They think about how their bodies change after pregnancy and all that. And if they choose that they want to, you know, use a device to make it better, that's okay, lah. Yeah. But then I guess it's the moment you put it in the hands of someone else to tell the mother to do it, lah.
So what if it's beat his belly bout for Father's Day?
For Mother's Day?
For Father's Day.
Oh, for Father's Day.
So this is not specifically postpartum, right?
Correct. Yeah,
it's just a slimming device.
Just slimming device.
It was beat his belly bulge, Terrence.
Yeah, it's still fat-shaming in some way, lah, right? Yeah. But maybe it wouldn't cause as big a thing, because for guys, we don't go through that.
Yeah.
That the big thing called pregnancy or motherhood, lah, right?
But we do NS what then, right? I'm kidding.
You're going to link it to income inequality in Singapore and race.
So
maybe for guys it's not that bad, but for mothers especially, they have been through this, like, something quite traumatic to the bodies, right?
Mm.
So to suddenly say that, almost like shame them for it, like, oh, you got belly bulge, let me help you beat it.
And I mean, even just the nature of the, like, generally clothing, right?
Yeah.
Women's clothing tends to be more fitting, right?
Mm, okay.
I would say that, tend to be more fitting.
I'm waiting for you to finish what you're saying.
Yeah, because that belly bulge, it is not just pregnancy.
Yeah,
as I've gotten older, like, there's this little part of the belly that it's just bulges.
Yeah,
it bulges out.
Yeah.
So, but thankfully, as a guy, you wear slightly baggier t-shirts, you can hide it.
Yeah.
But for women, and I think it is a fair generalization that, yes, they also have baggy clothes, but they also, like, have fitting clothes. Some guys choose to wear fitting clothes.
Yeah.
But, like, as a guy, wearing a t-shirt is more common, baggy t-shirt.
Yeah.
So this belly bulge thing, I would imagine, like, why I find it's not the best tagline is because even when you're shopping, right, whether it's his or her, if you're with someone, let's say you're, like I'm with my wife, or someone is with their husband, and it says beat his belly bulge, the first thing you're going to look at is what? It's going to look at his belly. Right. So then it feels like, as a tagline, it's pretty shit.
Mm.
But yeah, I also agree that it's more the gender next to the belly bulge that makes it feel like a bit too targeted.
Yeah.
To beat her, I think it's a bit of a stretch also.
Yeah. Because the belly bulge thing really is, as a mother and going through pregnancy or that, it's not something that you can really control, right?
Unless
it just happens.
Unless you say beat her belly bulge when she's pregnant, which means you're beating the kid.
Which is even worse.
Or
even, like, talking about, in fact, it's unhealthy for the child if the mother is not, like, having a, you know, if it's too small. So you don't want to encourage mothers to worry about their weight and things like that when they are pregnant and all that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess the equivalent would be, for men would be like, lengthen his penis, you know, with this device or something like that.
You are different, Terrence.
No, yeah, but my point is, it cannot be controlled, right?
No, the belly bulge or belly fat, you can control it, lah.
Why can't control
it? No, I really think, for people who have genetic issues, fat shaming and just the fact of the matter is that I know there are people with certain genetic issues that maybe they can't process the fat that well.
Yeah.
But I do believe that for the most part, if you really die had a gun to your head, you need to lose weight, most people can. Penis length, right? Different.
No, but I think, the point here is that it's a Mother's Day campaign.
Yeah.
And but as a mother, you have to get pregnant and your body will stretch regardless of how you control it.
Correct. But the belly bulge applies to, like, even women who have not been pregnant, men who have not been pregnant.
Yeah.
I just think this is a Mother's Day thing that I don't think it's only for people who have been through pregnancy.
So what I'm saying is that, because you were saying that belly bulge can control, I think my thing is that a lot of mother's belly bulges, they have to be there, right?
Because you are
giving birth. And
yeah.
If there was no belly bulge, mean there was no pregnancy.
Okay,
right?
It's more controllable than your penis length.
My point was that if you say something that as the belly bulge, like, if you try and make it sound like it can be controlled, I think the point is that mothers, you don't want them to worry about the belly bulge when they're pregnant and all that, right? After that, being a mother, you want to lose weight or what, you can choose.
But I don't think this is during pregnancy.
It's not. But I think the point is, because it's a Mother's Day thing as well, And inevitably, being a mother means being getting pregnant and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So you will, you have no choice. You have to, you will have that belly bulge, right?
Yeah.
So that choice is taken away from you in terms of like, there will be a belly bulge for you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's why I said the equivalent is like if you are making a, you know, making shots at a guy for his penis length or so, which is
I still
about
think it's
being
different.
Controlled.
Because to me, it is not just the immediate time after a pregnancy where there's a bulge.
Yeah.
I think, like to me, this is a campaign towards mothers, regardless of when they gave birth and all, at various stage of like physical fitness. I didn't see it as that necessary bulge that comes right after pregnancy. Okay. I'm saying that even that, if you look at a time span of 5, 6, 7 years, technically, it's more controllable than your penis length.
Correct. Technically. So, I think now we're arguing about the technicalities.
The analogy.
Yeah. Because I'm trying to make sure that you're not saying that, you're not fat shaming women for having belly bulge. Because that's what it sounds like to me.
No, I'm saying, okay, then you're talking belly bulge at what point? 2 days after pregnancy? Of course, that's uncontrollable.
Yeah.
But 10 years after pregnancy, I do believe that if you really want to lose weight, that if you had no choice, if your life depended on it, most people can lah.
So again, you're blaming the individual who... For their life choices after pregnancy. Basically.
10 years after pregnancy.
Years
after pregnancy.
So being a
which
mother.
Which means like a normal person.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's why.
Put me in a corner.
I put you in a corner because becoming a mother or that also comes with certain, even beyond giving birth and everything, there are things that happen to your body that kind of change the composition of your body and all that as well. Which I think, it's something that, I only realized after I became a parent and I watched the whole process as well. So again, I wouldn't put a time frame to it that, during your period of pregnancy, belly bulge is not your fault. But after that, it's your fault.
I'm not saying it's your fault. Like people who are bigger and all, it is their choice. But I do feel that people can be responsible for their weight more so than like some people say, I have no control over it and I don't buy that fully lah.
I would say you have less lah as a mother.
Yeah. Already. So again, going back to the analogy, the penis length is very difficult to change. Even if you wanted to, how are you gonna change it? If you lose weight, if you do this and all, your penis length not gonna change, right?
Arguable. There's ways. I mean I've heard of things, I've heard of things, not for myself, because I'm completely happy and everything, but I've heard of things like, I mean, guys, for example, just as a tangent, if you lose a lot of weight, there's a lot of fat around your groin area, right?
Mm.
And apparently, visually, that will help you also look more endowed, right?
Mm.
So I'm not saying that, back to the point. So my point is, penis length cannot be fixed. There's much less control, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would say where I disagree with you is that it's not as easy for any mother. It's harder. It's harder for a mother to just go back to pre-pregnancy kind of body and all
of
that.
Of course, it's harder, but it's also very hard to run like a marathon in 3 hours, but that you can take steps to get closer there.
I know.
To me, penis length is something you cannot change because it's biological. Yeah. Unless you got cosmetic surgery or something.
Great. So that's why I'm saying that maybe coming from you or us as guys, saying that, it's totally something that you can control your belly bulge.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying it's very hard. But I'm just saying, I also don't say that you have absolutely no control over it. People have control over their lives, their career and all that. And sometimes everybody makes decisions.
So because what I'm hearing you saying is that if it was just beat the belly bulge, you're totally okay with that. Product targeted at women or mothers, right?
Yeah.
But the tagline is beat the belly bulge. You're okay with that.
How are they targeting the mothers?
It's a product for mothers who maybe want to beat their own belly bulge or what lah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not part of the marketing campaign and it's for anyone, sure. Even though the bigger issue I have is I don't think a machine can just isolate the fat in that area.
It can,
to me, that is a big issue that is not being addressed lah.
Yeah.
But if the marketing thing, the slogan is just beat the belly bulge, I have less of an issue lah.
To me, I have an issue with beat the belly bulge lah. Because to me, fundamentally, I think it's just preying on this, on insecurities that any new mother or mother of children has for years, even beyond just that pregnancy period.
That means if it's couched in a Mother's Day campaign?
If it's a product targeted at mothers.
But so how is it targeting mothers? Because if it's a product targeting mothers, then I also have an issue with it. But I thought you said as a product that
no,
is just
it's targeting
there.
Mothers for mothers. Like they say that it's, you know, it's for mothers post-pregnancy or whatever, you know.
Mm.
Then that's where I just in general don't think that this idea of focusing on the belly bulges is something to really market in this way.
So let's say if it's not Mother's Day campaign.
Okay, then I think it's okay if it's generally for women more that. But if it's a product targeted to mothers, then I think you can't use this. You should not be using this this belly bulge thing Not the beat thing I'm whatever, but the belly bulge thing I'm like. Eh.
Yeah, if it's targeted towards Mother's Day, then I also feel that's not the best slogan. But if it's a general product, even though it sounds ludicrous, beat the belly bulge. That one I got no issue.
Maybe it comes from a place of I've witnessed the sacrifices that a lot of young mothers have to make.
So you got the moral high ground, right?
It's a moral high ground.
I'm
watching over you. But overall, I just find just not a great way to hang their marketing for this product on.
Yeah,
and I was trying to pull you to shore in terms of
don't make it seem like I'm drowning. I still stand by the fact that it is easier to lose your belly bulge than to change your penis length through your own actions.
Okay. Maybe I triggered you with talking
because
about
that,
penis length.
No, because don't try.
Because you got so heated about that.
That analogy to me doesn't make sense.
Mm.
So I have more issue with the analogy, and then you trying to use that to pay me in a corner. Now you're making me sound like I'm insecure about my dick length.
Okay, maybe change your height. Change your height. Maybe not penis length.
But
height.
How?
Huh?
How can you change your height unless you go for cosmetic surgery? Cut your femur in half and extend it and all.
So I'm just saying that maybe don't talk about penis length.
Even the height thing, I will still think is not a good analogy.
But to me, that's where the belly bulges in some sense also is quite close to that category of stuff. That they shouldn't be hanging the marketing on.
Not hanging the marketing on is one thing, but the analogy is another thing. Not a comparable analogy.
Very triggered.
I just think your analogy is not accurate, Terrence.
Very angry this penis length analogy that I've used.
I have no issues with my penis length.
Something
in it. I'm also happy with the reality of it.
I mean, I would love to hear, of course, it's two guys talking about it. I would love to hear what women think about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That. Would they feel offended by someone even pointing out the belly bulge and everything, right?
Because
that's what I'm saying is that I don't think they should point out, even be pointing out those belly bulges thing.
I agree with you on.
Yeah, for
just
mothers,
analogy. Yeah. The analogy was what I disagree on, and I stand by that.
It's okay. It's okay. We can have different opinions about it, and that's the beauty of it.
That's the point of the podcast.
We'd love to hear from actual mothers and how they feel. Because I don't want to appear like we're just trying to be woke for the sake of saying
woke.
That's why I express up front that I don't think the domestic violence thing, I think that's a stretch. I feel that there's and then you can nitpick anything already. Why is it using pink? Pink sexist, that kind of thing, right?
I would also like to hear from people who have considered changing their dick length and height hear their thoughts on whether analogy makes sense.
Correct.
Cool, Darren.
Dick length, big issue for Harish. He wants to know, so for the big group of y'all that have considered lengthening your dicks, Harish wants to hear from you.
If you want to hear about the thoughts on this case and the analogy, then you need to get both sides. I'll just message my dick length changing WhatsApp group. Guys,
how you feel about
need
this?
Your help. Yeah. Need your help, guys.
This hypothetical campaign. But
Man.
Speaking of hearing from people, what is your one short comment of recent times?
My one short comment was something that I think is useful info. It was news to me, which will kind of reinforce what you were saying in the previous podcast, 523.
Yeah.
Internet Lurker, 96, long-time commenter. Pointed out that in the Business Times, it was quoted that the swearing-in ceremony for PM Wong, the soon-to-be PM Wong, will take place at the Istana at 8 p.m. on May 15th.
Oh, yes.
So correct. It is going to be at night.
Yeah, it is going to be at night. Because you were saying that it's...
I thought it would be during the day.
Yeah,
maybe because they want people to watch.
Or maybe after that, they have happy hour, go drinks, cocktails,
everything. Like, LHL after that, it's like, guys, table on me, man.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's going to be a night thing. Lah. Are you going to be watching all the way?
I watch a bit. I mean, I'll just leave it on. I'll leave the TV on. Mm. I think it'll be quite interesting to watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was my one short comment. What about you?
My one short comment is also from Reddit. And it's actually with regards to the not the most recent episode, lah, but the previous one that we had before, lah, right?
Mm.
About the ERP system causing frustration and the security guards digging, they're bickering over that video, lah, right?
Mm.
And I think it was quite interesting because off the back of the podcast and maybe with their own initiative, some people on Reddit started digging up about like when exactly this whole ERP thing was introduced and who was the minister in charge and all that. So Singapore Ring was said literally traced back a little bit into when the request for proposals opened in 2014 and then there was apparently an evaluation test for a year and a half in Woodlands and everything. So that's quite interesting lah, in the sense that people started to look at actually under whose watch was this approved. Because I think ultimately that's the most important thing, right? Like who was the person at the top who was overseeing this and did not have the foresight to see how outdated this system would look like all these years later.
Yeah.
Because I think since then there's been someone created an ASMR video of them interacting with the ERP device in their car. And like you don't even need to listen to it, but you just watch how unresponsive the screen is sometimes when you're like trying to tap certain buttons. And then like, you know, they talk about being able to push the screen down. The whole thing just like collapsed at one point when the guy was trying to twist it, you see. So it really, just without any words, it demonstrated how archaic the whole system looks. And it really boggles your mind, like how anyone could have used this in an 18-month evaluation test and then thought that, hey, oh, this would be a good idea 7 years down or 10 years down the road. Now, you know?
Yeah, I think that comment was great because it was actually my one-shot comment the last episode.
Oh, already? Okay. Great.
So that means it's seconded one-shot comment.
No, but it carried on. There's still, like, even like 12 hours ago, there were new comments.
Oh, so there's a...
Yeah. So, there's more information, more threads, yeah. Award of ERP2 was made in February 2016. And the CEO of LTA resigned just 2 years in the job and things like that.
I see.
So there's more stuff coming out at the same time. Yeah. It's continuing.
Solid.
So yeah, I'm building on your
one-shot comment.
Yeah.
All right, what about your one-shot thing, man?
Oh, my one-shot thing is a bit more original. My one-shot thing, of interest to you, I'm sure. This is the 20th anniversary of the first commencement speech that I listened to while I was studying the US.
Steve Jobs,
Bono speaking at UPenn's commencement in 2004. Yeah, so this is exactly 20 years later, May 17th, 2004. Bono delivering Penn's commencement speech. And it's very interesting now because do you hear that Columbia has just cancelled their graduation ceremony because of all the protests. Going on in there now? And so this was 20 years ago, very bright-eyed me.
Also, you attended the graduation.
I was helping out because I wanted free accommodation for a couple more weeks. So I volunteered to help out. And I sat in and listened to this.
Because after the semester ends, right?
Yeah. So it was, Bono. Coming to school, you're like, oh, goddamn, I got to try and listen to it, right?
Yeah.
So it was, but I listened to the speech again recently. This is a very, very old recording. And it was pretty awesome. And he talks about a lot of things that I feel even more relevant today. You know, 20 years later, this somehow popped up my feed and I just listened to it again with 20 years of experience and 20 years of understanding how shitty the world can be.
20 years.
It's different.
So you could tell young, bright-eyed Terrence one thing.
I can tell back then it was a lot more like, the world's your oyster.
What would you tell him?
What I tell him?
Yeah. Young bright-eyed Terrence listening to Bono.
I mean, he's probably at that point he was delivering this speech. He's probably my age that I am now, right?
And no, telling young thing. Terrence.
Yeah, or telling myself.
Yeah,
about this speech.
No, you telling Bono, lah.
Oh, Terrence. I thought we get Bono.
No, you telling young Terrence.
No, I think the speech was very good, and a lot of things still ring true about the speech. But at the same time, like universities, like you know, even higher education in general has a very different like there's a lot of strange things going on in higher education now that I think people are realizing when watching what's going on in the protests and all. So it's quite a different environment, right?
So that's what you would tell young Terrence?
Yeah, you listen to the speech for what it's worth and all. But just remember that, yeah, la, it's a very different world, right? Yeah. Correct. Yeah, that's what I'll tell myself.
No real actionable thing or anything.
No, honestly, when you listen to the speeches, they are there to sort of just like entertain you, you know, and your parents and everything when you graduate, inspire a little bit, all that. So take everything with a pinch of salt, you know. You know, it's not, I mean, he also has, there's certain things that people accuse him of. Not the best things also, right?
Mm.
So yeah, you always got to be careful of what you listen to. That's what I would say, yeah.
Cool.
And what's your one-shot thing?
My one-shot thing is like, I chanced upon this through social media. I didn't know what's happening, but there was the roast of Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was live stream on Netflix.
Mm, mm.
It's a 3-hour show. And I watched some of it. I mean, some of it was okay, but if you have just a few minutes, I don't know whether the clip is online, I'll try and find. But the roast by Nikki Glaser, right, was damn good.
Who's Nikki Glaser?
She's a stand-up comedian in the US.
Okay.
Not A-lister, but well-known enough.
Okay.
But she made fun of Kevin Hart and Tom Brady, and the jokes were damn good.
Okay. So why would a Singaporean even care about Tom Brady, though?
I don't think you need to care about Tom Brady. It's just the jokes are funny.
It's jokes about him, right?
But okay, so as long as you know that he's one of, considered the greatest quarterback of all time.
And quarterback is the most important person on the American football team.
Yeah, right? Correct. Right. The one who gets the ball and then like throws it for the people to receive it. And he's damn handsome. And he married Gisele Bündchen, who divorced him last year.
Oh, okay.
And he lost $30 million in a crypto scam.
He was shelling for FTX.
Know that bit, and the jokes were quite funny.
But it's about him.
No, the joke's about Kevin Hart also, and the other comedians on it.
Okay.
So just that clip. The rest all, I would say, but I thought it was shit. And I mean, the fact that Netflix streamed it live, I thought quite interesting.
Interesting.
Okay. So yeah, that's my one-shot thing.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool, man. All right, that's the end of the podcast. So remember, if you enjoyed it, please share it with at least one other person.
Yeah.
And if you want to work with us, what should they do, Terrence?
Check out ministryoffunny.com. So there's two Fs in that, ministryoffunny.com.
Yep. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.